This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. As our state's population gets older, and since the topic has been in the news so much recently, many families are wondering about what to look for when it comes to cognitive decline.
But someone with dementia or maybe the beginning stages of dementia, they're going to lose their phone, maybe take a couple steps away from it, and forget what they're even looking for.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. The drought-like conditions blanketing the state are starting to cause problems for lakes and streams, especially in the northern region. Brianna Heaney has more.
Stream flow across the central Appalachian region is ranging from low to very low, following a hot summer with little rainfall. One of those waterways is the Tygart Valley River, which supplies water to Tygart Lake. The valley has received no measurable precipitation since July 5th, with water levels dropping quickly since around that time. The lake has now reached record low levels and is causing the marina on the lake to have to close early. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers says the drought will affect water quality, navigation, recreation, and public health due to the increased risk of harmful algae blooms and other water-related hazards. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney in Charleston.
Cancer advocates are petitioning West Virginia's governor to consider an investment for tobacco prevention in his expected call for a special session in August. Emily Rice has more.
Advocates with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network delivered around 900 petitions and support letters from various state health associations to Governor Jim Justice's office at the Capitol on Wednesday, asking him to prioritize funding to address tobacco use in the state during a rumored upcoming special legislative session. Doug Hogan is the network's government relations director.
What we're looking for is an initial investment of around $4.5 million. And that money would be to go for youth prevention strategies. We would also be able to provide additional resources for adults who want to kick the habit of tobacco products.
West Virginia is ranked 50th for funding critical programs to reduce tobacco use and has the highest adult and teen smoking rates in the nation. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Emily Rice in Charleston.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health. The Allegheny Front, based in Pittsburgh, is a public radio program that reports on environmental issues in the region. Here's their latest story about advanced recycling in the Ohio River Valley.
Could plastic recycling create a more sustainable future for our region? A new report says no. This is the Allegheny Front Environment Update. I'm Carol Holsoppel. The report from the Ohio River Valley Institute looks at chemical recycling, or what the industry calls advanced recycling. There are different methods, but basically high heat or chemicals break down plastic to the molecular level, so it can be made into more plastic or other materials. Kathy Hipple, a finance professor, is one of the authors of the report called Chemical Recycling, a False Promise for the Ohio River Valley. I asked her why it calls chemical recycling a false solution to the plastic pollution problem and says it's not really recycling at all.
Even at the most optimistic growth projections, it really will not begin to make a dent in the plastic pollution problem. At most, it could recycle less than 1% of the plastic pollution. And in fact, it shouldn't be called recycling. The definition of recycling is taking a product, breaking it down, and producing more of that same product. In this case, most chemical recycling done produces fuel, and it does not create more plastic.
What are some of the economic arguments against chemical recycling plants?
In short, the business case for chemical recycling has never been proved. There are only 10 chemical recycling plants operating so far in the country, and none of the many that have been out there have ever produced at scale or profitably. So you've got a lot of false promises that we could recycle up to this amount and we could do this. And then you see these plants getting closed. There was a recent one in Oregon that was closed and they said, we achieved all of our goals. The two joint venture partners decided it was not economically profitable and they closed it.
If the chemical recycling industry is still kind of immature and the technology is unproven, why not let it develop and see if it can eventually help recycle and reduce all this plastic that we're drowning in?
That is the argument that the fossil fuel or petrochemical industry has used and is continuing to use. But let's take a step back and look at the petrochemical fossil fuel industry. Why have they advocated so hard for recycling? One is the demand for transport fuel. That's what fuels our cars, our boats, our trains will inevitably decline.
Is that because of renewables?
Renewables, electric vehicles, something like 20% of all vehicles sold. So what is their next growth industry? They would like to keep making virgin plastics. They're seeing petrochemicals as their new growth propeller. And so how can they continue to produce new plastic is they can tell the industry or tell the world, don't worry, we can always recycle plastic. Yet the Center for Climate Integrity has done some research and said big oil and the plastics industry has deceived the public for decades, knowing that plastic cannot really be recycled. And this has allowed the oil and gas companies, the petrochemical companies, to continue to produce ever more plastic.
Kathy Hipple is one of the authors of a new report called Chemical Recycling, A False Promise for the Ohio River Valley. There's a link at AlleghenyFront.org. That's the Allegheny Front Environment Updates. I'm Carol Holsapel.
The Allegheny Front is based in Pittsburgh and reports on regional environmental news. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Mostly cloudy skies, a chance of rain and thunderstorms this morning in central and southern West Virginia. Clearing this afternoon, highs in the 70s and 80s. Clear overnight with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs in the 70s and 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by Solar Holler, bringing clean energy to families across West Virginia. More at solarholler.com. As our state's population gets older, and since the topic has been in the news so much recently, many families are wondering about what to look for when it comes to cognitive decline. Yesterday on West Virginia Morning, News Director Eric Douglas spoke with Teresa Morris, the West Virginia Program Director for the West Virginia Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, about the topic. This morning, we're playing back the second half of that interview with more signs to look for.
Let's talk about for a second the warning signs of cognitive decline, of onset of Alzheimer's, dementia. What are the things to look for?
They're going to misplace things and lose them, and they're going to lose the ability to retrace their steps. I lose my phone almost every day. My children say that I have an Apple Watch just to find my phone because it has that
option. Find my watch, yeah, or
yes.
Find my phone, yeah.
Yeah, but typically I can retrace my steps and realize, oh, I came in the door, I put my phone down, then I went to my room. And if I think about it, I realize my phone is in the kitchen, you know. But someone with dementia or maybe the beginning stages of dementia, they're going to lose their phone, maybe take a couple steps away from it, and forget what they're even looking for.
Right.
They're not going to have any recollection of what's missing.
But you know, and we all, I hear that all the time. It's like, oh, I, you know, I, like you, I'd forget my phone, you know. But we're not talking, oh, or you walk into a room, I forgot what I even came in here for. And then 10 seconds later, you go, oh, yeah, I was going to do this.
Exactly.
It's
gone.
Gone.
It is gone. It is just gone. You're also going to see sometimes these folks start having issues with their judgment. And so maybe all of a sudden they're giving money to an organization that maybe isn't legit. You might see them, you know, their neighbor boy comes over and sweeps their porch and they give them, you know, $300 or, you know, whatever.
Something out of
what? Out of ordinary,
out
yes.
Of ordinary, yeah.
And it's that ability to judge what's appropriate and what's sure. not appropriate. You're going to see these folks withdraw from work or social events. They, even hobbies that they used to enjoy, you might see them quit that or stop that. And a big part of that is, I think, they know something is going on. They're not getting maybe the whole conversation. They're not able to understand the whole experience. So naturally, they just withdraw from right. that.
If somebody's in the beginning stages, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking beginning stages. Once you're
right.
stage four, stage five, you're...
Right.
We don't know what's going on, actually. But do they know? Are they aware? Or is it just something doesn't feel right?
You know, it's hard to, it's really hard to tell. I think folks at this stage where we're just starting to see symptoms, we're trying to figure it out, these folks do know something maybe isn't right. They might even acknowledge that they forget things from time to time, or they might acknowledge that they're having trouble, you know, with their memory or their problem solving. But as the disease progresses, those abilities to be self-aware decrease.
Hmm.
They lose that. They lose that ability to self-regulate
okay.
even.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's why there's that level of withdrawal, because they know something's wrong, but really they don't want anybody else to know something's wrong. And then the last thing, which I believe is probably a little further up if we were to rank these, is changes in mood and personality. These folks, they might become more easily upset. They might be more aggravated. But if you think about it, if I'm having trouble communicating to you what I want to say or what I need even, I'm going to be frustrated about
right.
that. And I might even become aggravated, and I might even become a little aggressive if I were trying to tell you I needed food and you had no idea what I was trying
yeah,
to say.
The words that I'm hearing, you think you're saying one thing.
Yes.
The words I'm hearing are gibberish.
Nothing. Right.
And
right.
You're getting hungry and angry
yes.
and frustrated. And yeah.
Yes. I'm a speech pathologist by trade. I have a T-shirt that says behavior is communication. And that's just so true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when these folks with a diagnosis and as they progress, you know, they are going to start having some behaviors. But I would say 99% of the times, it's their behaviors are because they can't communicate their wants or
sure.
their needs.
Okay.
That was Teresa Morris from the Alzheimer's Association speaking with Eric Douglas about the warning signs of cognitive decline. Visit our website to hear the complete interview as well as some bonus content on helping family members know when it's time to seek help or give up the car keys. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Eric Douglas produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.